recorded May 21st, 2018, in Los Gatos, California, the fringes of Silicon Valley. I'm Lyle Troxell, and this is Geek Speak. And in the air room with me is Mr. Miles Elam. Howdy, Miles.
How's it going?
And Mr. Ben Jaffe. Howdy, Ben.
How's it going? You didn't answer his question. How's it going?
It's going okay. Well, we were talking about sports and
go Warriors.
Warriors and Steph or Seth Curry?
Steph Curry.
Steph Curry.
Steph.
Steph?
Steph. Steph. As for,
like, with an F?
Stephen.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, we started the show already.
And we were talking.
And we had to stop.
We had to stop because I kept on swearing about it. And the general thing that you and I were arguing about, Miles, is that in general, I'm more interested in what's going on in your life and what's going on in Ben's life and the people close to you than some other person that's famous that plays basketball. And you were saying that that doesn't make any sense because, my God, 400 points.
Right, because I can talk about advances in Linux, for example, which is by people that you don't know, and I'm talking about the exploits of it, and you'll go, oh, Raul can do that? And you were suddenly interested in. So it really isn't about whether or not I'm watching someone else and reporting that information. It's really about the topic itself. You just don't like sports.
I would agree.
Yeah, me too. I'm sorry, you're an army of one.
If we had a podcast about sports...
You were just making excuses for your bigotry, and that's all well and good.
If we had a podcast about sports, I mean, obviously, we'd be engaged in it, right?
Right. Now, so, if we were talking about this before the podcast started and it was just a personal conversation, it would make a lot more sense to talk about sports and other personal interests that were not part of the show itself.
Personal,
I did that.
You say personal interests?
Yeah.
Yes. If anyone else besides you was interested in the topic, it would be of interest.
That's cold.
I know. It's cold. I wish that I had more care of it, but I don't. Soccer I'm more interested in because I played at one point. Maybe that's what it's about. Maybe it's the personal experience of playing the game a lot that makes you more interested in it.
Except the thing is, you just told me not 5 minutes ago that you had never made a half-court shot before in your life.
That's right.
Which implies that you have tried before.
Well, sure.
And so it seems like from that personal experience, it would impress you how often he makes a half-court shot
in the middle
of a game.
How often does he make a half-court shot in the middle of a game?
Since you asked.
Yeah, I don't have that set right off the top of my head. But I do have some highlight reels I can show you off of YouTube.
No, tell me that cool stat you were talking about earlier.
Oh, three-pointers?
Yes.
The fact that...
First off, keep in mind that most of the audience has no idea what we're talking about. So what's a three-pointer? I'm not asking for my own edification at all.
In a basketball game, you have an arc that is...
It's a curved line on the field
that is a variable distance from the basket on the
Isn't
sides.
It
it's a little
difference?
Bit closer than it is at the top of the key.
Because
the top of the key being where the 3-point line is.
Why is it a variable difference? Isn't it a perfect arc?
So wait,
it's
hold
not.
On. Just
it's
you're
not
saying
a,
if
it's
you
not
stand,
a perfect semicircle.
You're saying if you stand to the side of the basket, you're actually closer to the basket if you're right on the line than you are if you're standing right in front of the.
Yes.
However, you don't have the benefit of the backboard.
You don't have the benefit of the backboard, and I think that was one of the reasons for that.
Now, okay, so in a game, people can throw from this three-pointer, and of course, you get more points if you throw from that distance.
Exactly.
From beyond.
And throughout the course of the history of the NBA, no one got above something like 270 three-pointers in a single season.
Okay, are seasons a set number of games? Or a season, a certain period of time.
Yes. Seasons are a set number of games.
So like 60 games or some number.
These
That's
are the games
is.
That you go through and whoever has the best records goes on to the finals.
And therefore, if you are really good, you play more games. And
yes.
So your season is longer if you're really good.
This is regular season is this tabulation, so it doesn't include the finals.
Okay. So in the season, the highest any one player has ever made of three-pointers is 274?
Something. Yeah.
And is that amount of points or the amount of throws?
Number of... made free throws.
Okay. So that's multiply that by three is how many points they made with that. Okay, go on.
Yes.
I got you so far. This sounds geeky. Go on.
No one before had ever made 300.
Right.
I mean, no one had gone above
274. Yeah, 274 or something like that. Yeah.
In one particular season, Steph Curry skipped over the 300s and went straight to 402.
So he, this last season, threw 402 three-pointers.
Or 403. I can't remember
something like
one
that.
Of those. Yeah.
Some amazing amount. Almost. That's amazing.
So it's not just I beat someone by 10% or I beat someone by 1, which is how most records work nowadays. You get to the best of human effort and you are able to eke out a little bit faster runner. You know, a runner can go, you know, hundredths of a second faster than the previous record holder or the...
But this is a different level.
This is a different level.
Yeah.
This is a...
Does he play in general? I mean, besides his throws, does he play in general at a different level?
Yes, he does.
In every way?
Yes. In fact, in the last game that he played, he wasn't making three-pointers in the first half of the game. He only made something like 3 out of 19 attempts, which is horrible.
Well, for him, it's pretty good for me.
I don't know. You might be able to make 3 out of 19. But
no.
And so he compensated by just driving to the basket and doing layups where no one could really stop him easily. He has a wide variation of skills, not to mention, you know, passing to people expertly.
All right. Thank you, Miles, for that basketball update. And Steph Curry, right?
Yes, Steph Curry.
So here's the question for all of you listeners. Do you want to hear about basketball every once in a while from us? Because Miles loves talking about it. I'd love to hear a yay or nay. So just email us.
I'd love to hear a nay. Sorry.
I was actually thinking not so much that, but as in terms of would you like to hear about statistics in areas outside of pure mathematical or computational arenas?
If you're still listening to this episode of Geek Speak, please email us. Okay, what's the vote look like? It's yay for Miles is the subject line, right? Or keep it geeky is the other subject line. So that's the two subject lines you can email.
It's not geeky. It's, anyway, different kinds of machines.
If you like that whole segment, I would be fully willing to engage more in this. We'll do other sports. It'd be totally a blast. Maybe we can even cover like mind flayers and D&D sometime. Geeks at geekspeak.org. Tell us what you think. I'm very curious what people think of us deviating from our normal tech and social justice kind of stuff that we do. Right? What do you say?
I was going to say social awareness was already a deviation from tech.
But we've been doing it so long. It's part of the show now.
Although it was still related to the tech industry in many ways.
Most of the time it is. Yeah.
So I'm not exactly talking about the graphics and the overlays they do in basketball games. So that's fair. It is more of a deviation than normal.
Yeah, but still interesting and obviously great depth. And keep in mind that the whole premise of the show from early on was people really interested in a topic, passionately talking about it. That's what a geek is, someone that really engages in a topic at a high level.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, that stat from Steph Curry is over a year old now. It's just news.
I was going to tell all my friends.
Because that has to deal with the relevancy. Because one of the things about Geekspeak is try to keep things more relevant.
Anyone that cares about, like, anyone that knows about basketball and cares about the topic segment is like, why are they talking about this? This is old news,
right?
So it wasn't even contemporary.
The reason why I brought it up in the first place, and because I got trapped into this, was that they just had a game where they beat the other team by 41 points, which is unheard of in a playoff game because those are the best teams. You're usually not that far apart from each other in terms of
don't they score 7 at a time though?
So that's why that stat that you just described sounded so familiar. You told me this last year,
probably
because I remember some blah 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 400 blah blah thing. Seth Curry, I remember that.
And how many just want to hear us go and like rib on each other for 15 minutes and
moving on
in between?
Miles, the topic of this news story is ridiculous. I hope that's part of the reason. What's an astroboffins? And please describe the story to me.
Boffin is someone that's it's a more British term than it is an American term. It's probably why you haven't heard it. But it's someone who is a technical expert out of the mainstream, sometimes refers to someone who doesn't have a
degree in the field or something?
Well, no, it's not that. It's usually someone who does have a degree in the field.
Okay.
Is it a geek? It's a geek. Yeah.
Okay.
Geek or nerd, depending on what your point of view. The idea is that a boffin is not necessarily someone who is the person you have a drink with and have a good time or even can explain the term very well. It's usually the person that's down in the weeds and getting the data and disseminating it in some way.
But they're definitely expected to be intelligent and well-versed in the topic at hand.
Yes. So they are experts in
the field. Astro, of course, is an astronomy or astronomy person, I'm assuming.
That's what I was going to ask.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
It depends upon your point of view. Many times, boffin can be considered a derogatory term.
It sounds
like it. But then again, it depends upon
geek.
The point of view. Yeah. And then in other circles, it's perfectly all right.
All right. Go on, geek.
At any rate, astroboffins have spied what's called the greediest black hole yet. And this, of course, being something from 12 billion years ago. But still.
Yeah, this is really old news.
Like that Seth Curry stuff.
Yeah, it's like really old news.
Right. This black hole is the mass of 20 billion suns.
That's a big black hole.
Right. That's the thing with astrophysics and astronomy. You can't really grasp it. You can just give numbers and just kind of go, wow, that number is bigger than the other one because the human brain can't handle it.
If you think you could even get near that, just try to comprehend the mass of the sun. You can't. You fail.
Yeah, a million
20
Earths.
Billion of those.
Yeah, a million Earths can fit inside the sun and yet calculate the mass of the Earth. We can't do it.
No.
You can do a number, but the human brain
or try to comprehend how much mass there is in, like, California a mile down, right? That much. Yeah, you can't.
Or for that matter, how far away 12 billion light years is, the location of this.
Okay. So this thing's really far away and really, really big. And
but not so.
How they detect
it? Not just the fact that it's. Yeah. Not just the fact that it's really, really big. The fact that it grows at a rate of 200 million suns per million years.
That's a lot of suns.
What? That's almost a sun a day.
That's, yeah, it is.
Wow.
It's a equivalent.
That is a greedy black hole.
That's a hungry, hungry hippo.
Yeah, that's a really strange term to use to describe a black hole. It's so greedy. What?
If this black hole replaced Sagittarius A star, which is the one that's in the center of the Milky Way, it would appear 10 times brighter than a full moon.
Wow. So it's spitting out a lot of energy.
As opposed to the background. We can't see visually the black hole at the center of the Milky Way. It's obscured by too much dust. But even so, we can, on a very dark night, see the Milky Way, just that, the reason why it's called the Milky Way, that milky appearance, that
all
path,
those little stars.
That trail, yeah. So that this thing would appear 10 times brighter and wash out basically all the other stars in the sky.
Pretty cool. Astrophysics, man.
So if we grew up with that, or if humanity grew up with that, they may not know that stars existed. They would just think there's a moon and there's a second thing that is like a moon, but doesn't move like the moon does. It doesn't change with the tides. It's just there.
So I have
a
question.
How different would our knowledge of cosmology be?
So I have a question. Does astroboffin could just be astronomers in this case, right?
Yes.
So you just wanted to introduce a new term.
No, it wasn't him.
I was doing the article.
The article does that.
Yeah.
Is the article from like something.uk? .co.uk?
Yes. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
From the Register.
Can you read the full title of the article?
Yes. Astroboffins spy the most greedy black hole yet, gobbling a sun a day, with the subtext, it farts out enough energy to irradiate all life on Earth. So that's another aspect of
a horrible headline.
Right, exactly. Now, that's the other interesting thing is that we were talking about what if humanity saw that and, like, how would it affect them? Well, it turns out that it's mostly ultraviolet light and X-rays coming out. So if it was at the center of the Milky Way, it would have made life on Earth impossible because all the X-rays would have sterilized the planet.
You're right. We wouldn't have been able to see stars because we'd be dead or never have existed. Ben.
Hi.
Please tell me something awesome.
I'm sitting across the table from you right now.
Yes.
Right. You know I'm sitting across the table from you. How do you know how far away I am?
Well, I have a general feeling of how big the room is. I know how big your head is.
Okay.
And therefore kind of the size of your appearance of your head helps me. But also there's lots of stuff between us. There's a couple laptops and a table, and I kind of know how big those are. So I know you have to be far enough for that. And there's a microphone, and I know that that cable has a certain length. So it's all kind of building up some knowledge about the room.
Like the size of the different things on the image that is your site.
Yeah.
Is there another way?
For me or for most people?
For you. No, not for you. For you, Miles. Sorry. You have two eyeballs.
I do indeed.
Yeah.
I have two eyeballs too, to be clear. However, yes. When I was a very young child, I had a muscular problem with my eyes, and my eyes never formed parallax, which means that I only look through one eye at a time. And therefore, what you were trying to infer, that I could use parallax by two images and compose them to figure out a three-dimensional space, I actually can't do the same way other people can do. I can kind of do it peripherally. And I can juggle and catch a ball, maybe even a basketball, but not as probably as well as other people. So,
right.
But that's what you're inferring is parallax. The idea that I have one image with one eye and another image with the other eye, and that helps me figure out distance.
Yeah, because you're seeing the world from two different angles, and so you can kind of see, by looking at the differences between those two images, you can kind of build a 3D understanding of the world around you, right? And actually, chickens and birds will do this, but in a different way. They'll move their head forward and backward, like that typical way that you imagine birds moving. And by comparing the image when their head is back versus forward, they can do the same thing. They can compare those two images and kind of get an idea of what things are closer and what things are further away and roughly how far they are.
Is that because birds' eyes are more directional? Like, well, why is it they don't do the way we do it? Or do they do it both?
I think it's because of their eye placement. Because we're predators, and so our eyes are both in the front.
Well,
and so, right?
Some birds are too.
So I don't know.
I'm wondering
actually.
If it's also that they have to be able to compensate for size and space at a much faster speed than we do. So maybe that's part of it.
Lizards do it too.
Do you know that when we're moving our eyes, when you look between two people, you're actually blind during that movement phase?
Yeah, saccades, is that how you pronounce it? That's right. The term. Yeah, we take in very little information when we're.
What does it do with my phone?
In transit. Oh, yeah, that's right. So your phone. All of our phones have at least one quote-unquote eye, which we call a camera. And your phone, the iPhone, what is it?
10.
The iPhone 10. Okay. It's not X anymore.
And the 7 Plus and the 8 Plus.
And the 7 Plus and the 8 Plus, which are Android phones?
No, iPhone.
Oh, 7 Plus. Oh, that's right. There are Android phones that do this. 7 Plus and 8 Plus are iPhones.
6 Plus, 7 Plus, and 8 Plus.
6 Plus has two cameras. No, 7 Plus was the first one with two cameras.
6 Plus had two cameras, but didn't offer what I think we're about to talk about. I think it had two cameras. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, so, yeah. So, the 8 Plus is what... So, okay. The story is that there is actually some software that takes advantage of the fact that a lot of phones... that the new iPhones have two cameras. Specifically, iPhone 8 Plus, although I don't know if it works on older hardware or not, where you have two cameras. But the idea, and this has been a thing that we've done in graphics, in the graphics world for a long time, is if you have a 3D understanding of the scene, you can actually add lighting to it after the fact. Like you can add a fake light in a three-dimensional space in this world that has been captured by these two cameras. Now you can't do a perfect job of it, right? But it does have an understanding of what is closer, what is further away by creating this kind of a map of what's in front of it.
Kind of like a 3D movie, like in Pixar when we have lighting, that's actually of course all virtual, whatever. You move instruments around. Because you've got a 3D map, the computer can actually figure out how the light would actually interact with that map. And you're saying with the 3D data in the phone's camera, it's possible to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so this...
Miles is correct. It is 6 Plus did not have it. 7 Plus was the first one that had the two cameras. Totally. Of course, always Miles is correct. The camera that I have, actually, the built-in, has a few features like lighting. Like I can take a photograph of you guys, or one of you at a time, with a certain mode that will actually scan a 3D representation, and then I can tell it to like make everything black besides you. Have you seen that happen?
Oh, yeah.
I'll do that real quick. But anyway, go on. So I think we kind of understand what we're talking about. You have two cameras taking a picture, and with those two cameras,
it can extrapolate what things are further away and what things are closer by comparing those two images. Now, they did kind of a crummy early experimental test back in November of 2017, and the the results were not very impressive. It was kind of awful. So they had to do a lot of work to try to get more information out of the depth of buffer. And then once they had all that information, they needed to do, they needed to actually produce a denser map of depth points from those depth points. So artificially improve the resolution of their data. And then they had to add some sort of a smoothing algorithm. And so they tried a whole bunch of filters and everything and figured out a pretty decent thing using interpolation and some bilateral filtering for avoiding edge artifacts. So trying to figure out like where are the edges in the photograph, maybe looking at the two-dimensional image and then looking at the three-dimensional data to try to reconcile those two things.
Here is a picture of Miles.
Oh, yeah.
That I just took, and I'll have it in the, if you've got a
oh, wow.
up-to-date up-to-date podcast player that has images in it, you might be able to see this image, but it's definitely not on our website. I'll show you what the original picture is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. So
and with the filter.
You've got Miles in front of a...
No, it shouldn't have.
That was actually why I brought this picture up, is you were talking about the edge detection and having a good... You'll notice how much Miles' hair is cut.
Wait, can I describe what I'm seeing?
Because yeah,
this is great radio material.
All right.
So we've got Miles sitting. There's a microphone in front of him. There's a wall behind him. There's a little, like a television thing in the background. And the new image is all of the background is just removed.
Just black.
And you see Miles. You see the microphone. Behind him is black.
And the cropping, like the side of your face and your hair, looks like a bad Photoshop job.
Right.
Right. You can really tell where that black line is. And I've seen different qualities that look better and worse. I mean, part of this is that, of course, your hair... I don't know why your hair looks so weird. Oh, yeah. It's just cutting off...
Wrong choice of words, man.
I think it's just like totally knocking out some of the really light qualities of the hair.
Hair is really hard to do even when you have it on a perfect green background or something like that and you want to do chroma keying or luma keying. It's just really difficult to do, and some of the software that does the best job is really expensive.
Okay, so we'll have that up on the GeekSpeak website and also in the podcast player if you've got a contemporary podcast player, but go on.
So yeah, so as kind of mid-explanation, they've figured out how to get a decent, a fairly high quality depth map out of all of this information. They from there deduce the normal map, and once you have a normal map, you can apply a lighting model onto a 3D scene. And there's a whole bunch of lighting model algorithms that they could just use to do that.
And do they have some samples in there of adding a red light and it works?
They're pretty impressive. And especially impressive if you have a graphics background, but because I don't know, like we've all seen the face masks in things like Facebook Messenger or in Snapchat, and you put one of those on, and like if you don't write software, you're like, whoa, that's kind of fun. But if you write software, like the first time you saw one of those, you're like, whoa, like
yeah,
how
that's really hard.
That's like it feels like it's real time. It feels like it's actually connecting with what's physically there on my face. In any case, and then after that they had to make an app, and so you've got a whole bunch of things that you can tweak, but it's not interesting for just your normal average user to tweak all of the different possible parameters. You want to make it actually more minimal that way a user would play with it. So
what's the app called?
The app is called Apollo. And actually, if you go on geekspeak.org, you will find a link to a Reddit post where the person who made the app one of the people who made the app describes this whole process, which cool. I kind of paraphrased.
Nice. All right. Thank you very much.
I'm looking through the YouTube video right now. It's very impressive.
Yeah. The black and white thing I was showing you guys, the picture that I took, is actually the least effective way. They actually have a few lighting effects in the Apple produced a couple lighting effects in this. I'll let you play with it a little bit later. Miles, let's talk about the Pentagon.
One of the things that the Pentagon worries about is security. And this is wanting to update ID cards so people can't get in just by having something forged or stealing it from someone else. And so when looking at how to improve it, they were looking at ways to take something that people have on their person all the time these days anyway, like a smartphone. And when someone makes a phone call or if they're going to use it in some way, that it doesn't just check, do you have the information or even... do you have the right touch ID or face ID using the Apple parlance? But
what else?
The same thing. But also looking to see, are they holding it at the same angle,
oh, interesting.
The same wrist tension?
Years ago, I recall us covering a story about the speed and the way, the cadence of your typing being a signature of who you are.
Right. And this one is, if someone is walking, does it follow their gait?
Oh, nice.
Now, they have things such as watching for hand pressure. And that one is probably going to be along the lines of maybe some extra hardware you have to put in there. Unless they mean when you go to answer the phone or whenever you do something that you're using the amount of pressure on cell phones that have a pressure sensor on there.
I have a colleague who taps his phone really, really hard. And I'm assuming, depending on the sensitivity levels of these touchscreens, you definitely have some knowledge about that. Mm-hmm. But also the size of the hit area if the operating system provides that to you. Because if you've got a bigger finger or if you use the meat of your finger versus the tip of your finger, you're going to have a different input.
The sensitivity for the pressure on phones is actually very good. They just put out the granularity quite far so that it, because the user interface, the human being, it's harder to get that sensitivity right.
Sure.
So there's really only two possible settings, three settings, like the one the light touch, one the kind of press, and then the hard press, even though it can detect multiple levels in between.
And I'd imagine you could produce a pretty good signature of my walking when my phone is in my pocket versus in my hand, because I always put my phone in the same way in the same pocket. But what if a person, puts it in a handbag versus holding it? I mean, these are going to be very different kind of cadence of your gait.
Well, not so much. The intensity would change, but your gait would be the same. The rate of vibration would be the same.
But if you were walking with someone that's slower, I mean, there's going to be differences. I'm just – in any case, this is one vector that they get to use to detect person is. That's really cool. Are they talking about having additional hardware on the devices or just using the out-of-box devices that people have?
They actually are adding in new hardware, but they also say that one of the things that they're doing could be available on most commercial smartphones within a couple of years.
One of the things that my iPhone X has, of course, is also facial detection. And I moved from finger detection to facial detection. I wasn't sure if I was going to like it. I absolutely love it, except for one thing that's kind of a flaw in the way I use my phone. And that is that my wife can't be added as part of the faces. So when you had fingerprints, you could actually add a partner as one of the fingers because you get like six fingers you can use and you can add somebody else that you want to be able to trust and use your phone. And when you're traveling or hanging out with your wife or partners and friends, whatever, that might want to use your phone, it's really convenient for them, their finger to be on there. But this facial detection system that Apple's produced, there's only one face allowed at a time.
And you don't have a passcode?
No, I passcode. So I've taught my wife the passcode and it's the solution. But it does come on instantaneously because the rules at work have to – the phone has to be locked all the time. So it's pretty quickly locks automatically. And so it's annoying to use except for me. And the facial detection thing is a little funny in that you do have to actually look at the lens. So if my kids want to play music in the car and they're using my phone, if it locks up, I have to look at the phone. They can't just put it at my face. I have to look at it. So if I'm driving, I'm like, no, don't stick the phone in front of my face. Use your own phone because it is a little So there's a few things that are a little irritating. At the same time, it's good security. And, of course, I could just, teach my kids my passcode.
It seems like that should be a feature to say, like, I'm unlocking it. And then you have something that says don't lock for the next half
hour. X period of time. Yeah. There is a bit of that. I just keep on telling them to keep the finger moving on it and keep it unlocked. Any case.
Yeah, but we're not just looking at how to identify a person. There's also a lot more technology involved in terms of making IDs, including identifying a car. Now, we have license plates.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Right. But soon there will be technology available where police officers could ID the vehicle via, for example, your roof rack.
Oh,
or by where the spare tire is and what kind it is.
Bumper
stickers.
Right, color, of course.
Ride-sharing company decal.
The same way that we detect differences in cars. Like you and I have the same white van, but ours look different with slight variations. Of course, license plate are different, but I don't know my license plate nor yours. Cool. So this is just a UI that would come up for the police officer to help them identify, or just part of the built-in system that's scanning and looking for cars all the time?
Well, this is an extension of license plate readers, which, by the way, can scan license plates at a rate of about 60 plates per second. So it does raise those questions of the Panopticon.
What's that reference from?
The Panopticon was a prison design by Jeremy Bentham, I believe, back in the 19th century, where the idea was that you had all of the cells along the periphery of a prison and their guard tower in the center, and it was tinted windows, and the ingress and egress to that tower were hidden from prisoners, so they would never know when someone was in there and watching, and you couldn't tell when you were being watched and when you weren't.
So effectively, you never had any privacy.
Right.
Right.
And it was actually really good at getting people not to commit crimes again when they exited prison, but it also had the side effect of they were also mentally challenged in many ways. Some psychoses would develop as a result of that.
Turns out healthy humans have privacy.
Yeah. Healthy humans don't feel like they're being watched at all times. And so it's interesting how much information is being gleaned just passively as we are going out and about, whether it be by cell phone, whether it be by the vehicle we drive, things like that, where you have a society like England, especially in London, where you have a culture of security cameras everywhere. Like your every movement would be on a camera somewhere.
If you're in the public, yeah.
And having that, except they haven't installed the security cameras, it's just a thing that we haven't really changed many of our behaviors, but suddenly it is different for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see how we will respond to that, especially because I don't feel that there is the same level of transparency going the other direction.
Well, so one of the things that always, as we've talked about license plate scanning for years, I always thought, well, what is it? Why not? Any business could do this. Any individual could do this. You could produce a large database of all moving vehicles with just a few cameras in different areas. And like you and I, you know, the three of us could produce a pretty good map of the areas that we live in, of where cars go and where they come from, mm-hmm. and have that knowledge. And I'm assuming over time corporations will have that. I'm just curious that, you know, when you think of the police doing it, at some level, some parts of the society is like, well, that makes sense. That's a good idea. You find stolen cars.
Now they
but
are.
When you think
yeah,
about,
now they do.
But when you think about anybody having that data, it starts to think – you feel a little creeped out about it, I think. You lose some privacy. If you want to go to the store and buy something and you go back, yeah, that was all tracked by multiple people.
Right. It's just curious that you go back, what, 30 years, something like that, beginning of the Reagan administration or earlier. One of the things that was spoken about as differentiating the United States or, you know, Western Europe from Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union was the fact that you were not being watched at all times by the secret police. And now we've gotten to the point where we have systems in place that the German Stasi would have killed for, would have been like, this is great. And it's just being part of our everyday society.
Do you think you operate better when you think you're being watched? You personally, Miles?
Do I operate better?
Meaning, are you a better citizen when you think you're being watched?
I'd like to think that I'm a good person either way, but I won't lie. I mean, if you see a police officer, you kind of straighten up and you make sure that you're doing everything right when you're behind the wheel. So obviously, yeah, when I feel that someone is watching me, a person of authority.
But that could just be a reminder of the type of person you want to be all the time. You just get sloppy. It might not be that you want to operate differently.
No, I don't want to be under stress at all times. And seeing police officers many times when I'm driving.
Stress, yeah.
Gives me, I wouldn't say it totally stresses me out. I don't think that I'm a horrible driver that's going to immediately, you know, have someone pull me over. I mean, there's the ethnicity thing, but I haven't really come across that in the area, thankfully. It's the, it's that aspect of this has an effect upon me, whether it be monetarily, the ticket, the time, the insurance policy.
The power differential. I mean,
the power differential is definitely there. It's stressful.
What about you, Ben? Do you think you operate as a more responsible citizen when you're being watched?
To some degree, but I think I would say the same thing as Miles, which is that I also feel stressed. Like I've gotten two tickets in my life, and one of them was totally justified. And the other was totally not. It was someone trying to meet their quota. And so when I see police officers, that always goes through my mind of like, okay, well, how many miles an hour am I above the speed limit? 4? Maybe I should go down to 2. Like, I don't know. It enters my mind. And not to say that that it's likely that a police officer will pull me over because of something like that. But the fact that it's a thing that always enters my mind and stresses me out a little bit. Like, but I think also a police officer on the street is a little different than knowing there's security cameras everywhere. So I don't think it's an exact apples to apples comparison, but well, here's I think there is some sort of like low level anxiety that might exist if there were cameras everywhere that I don't feel now.
Something I had wondered about was when we were talking about AI and pattern recognition and noticing some things and not, and especially with regard to driverless cars. Those same heuristics that can determine whether there's an obstacle in your way, is there a car in front of you turning, could be used as an AI for law enforcement to check traffic and say this person's doing it. And I have a back and forth in my head about whether or not this would be a good thing, because it would take the subjectivity out of whether or not you got a ticket, be very much in the, in theory anyway, when it, whether how it goes into practice in a real environment changes it. But that idea of, I don't care if you are a man or a woman or black or white or Hispanic or Latino, the fact that it would say, oh, okay, you came this close to a pedestrian in a crosswalk, that's the cutoff. And that's just what you right. do. And having it be in these fixed positions where it's not whether or not the cop is there and sees you or not and then feels like pulling you over, but just always there.
It's comparable to the light cameras, right? The red light cameras.
Except that one is specifically that case where you have...
You ran a red light.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying that that just at a more complex level that can detect more things.
Sure.
It's that very much like it's just going to be there anytime, and anytime you break that law, you're going to get hit with it.
Right, and it makes me wonder if it would make a nation more like Singapore, where you have this set of laws. They are fairly rigid, and they are studiously enforced. And... you also have a society that, by all measures, seems to be functioning quite well.
I would say that the neutrality of it, you know, that everybody's kind of judged the same way, the vehicle moved a certain way, is kind of a neat idea. There's something compelling about that.
Right. It also makes me think that maybe they, after enough people get caught by a certain thing, they would lobby for the rules to change a little bit and ease up a bit. But yeah.
When those cameras started coming in at intersections for actually just traffic flow analysis, not even the ones that are we're doing, you know, photographs of a license plate with the flash or anything, but just traffic flow analysis. I thought about that quite a bit because you'd come up to a stop sign and you may look at your phone, maybe text something as you're stopped at a stoplight, right? I think all of us have done it, even though we shouldn't be. And I realized that, well, it'd be relatively easy to write software that would detect that with those cameras because it's an obvious thing if there's light emitting. And then, of course, you'd have a still from that. You get prosecuted for it. Like, Not that hard of software to write.
Right.
And so I was just always curious that, well, like, how long do those things, that does that data get saved? We save it for a long time? You could retroactively be ticketed, you know, 4 years ago for something that you did on your phone. That kind of thing can happen in general, you know, post-analysis with a better software system of data that was already collected. You could find more crimes and other things from the past.
Yeah, there is also the issue of different areas are given more attention from a municipal standpoint. So if you have an area that has, let's take a very simple everyday example, which is more potholes, and then you have vehicles that are trying to avoid the potholes or have more uneven speed because of that, they're more likely to hit the edge of a heuristic to say, oh, that's going to get a ticket because of doing that. Than a place that is more affluent, that has had better repairs.
Yeah. So there is some built-in non-neutrality of the
right,
system.
Right. You have, sure. In more affluent areas, you have wider streets in general, so less likely to...
Potentially better operating cars.
But even beyond that, just the environment that you're in, you may have corners that are more amenable to people using them and less likely for error.
Yeah.
So there may still be a... you know, wealth component of it, even if you tried to equalize the playing field with an AI. It's like AIs without knowledge of classism, racism,
it's still going to be biased
unless we do an active part to fix that.
And that's something that we see in so many contexts when you're looking at data science, machine learning, and you have these data sets. These data sets implicitly have human bias built in. And so if you want to work on systems that use that data and don't try to counteract bias, which in some cases is impossible, but in other cases is just very, very, very difficult. If you don't try to counteract the bias, then you will build bias systems.
Right. And amplify it, because you'll take it as read that the system is working, and therefore you won't necessarily judge the output the same way.
And so I guess what you're talking about is kind of like a real world manifestation of this, rather than your data set being, I guess, representative of that in the system. You have the world itself being representative of that.
Speaking of operating appropriately in certain environments and being watched and so on, yesterday I took my kids to – they wanted to go and hang out at the mall. So I took my girls plus their friends to the San Jose Mall. And the intent was that they'd drop the preteens, teenagers off, and they would shop for a while I watched the Avengers movie, Infinity War. And so I picked up kids all over the San Jose Valley and then drove to San Jose, and obviously I was late. And so I'm driving along. I'm very good about not speeding when I'm late, because it doesn't actually add much to your travel. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to it, it has almost no effect. So I'm traveling, getting over to the theater area. That's close enough to the mall. The kids can walk from there, and I park, and we get out, and I go to the theater, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go, and the girls head off. And I'm like, great. And I'm standing in line. And the line, there's one person helping, and there's like 15 people in front of me in two different groups. And I'm waiting. And I'm waiting. The time is going. And I know that the credit, like, I'm 15 minutes late, so I'm losing credits. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking, and there's a manager. And the manager looks at me, and I'm like, can you help, do this? Like, get a little faster this? Mm-hmm. Nada. So she decides to, the manager walks down the hall. There's nobody else in the area, in the food area. There's one person with these 15 people, and there's a barrier in front of me that's just a rope that's about a foot off the ground. So I look around, and I step over it, and I walk in and see the movie. I didn't pay for a ticket. And my intention was actually just to buy right away on Fandango tickets, because I had planned on buying it earlier, but I wasn't sure I was going to make it, so I didn't want to buy it if I wasn't going to make it. So I get to the theater, I go into the theater, and the movie hasn't started. I sit down, the movie starts. Very end of the movie, I'm walking out. I'm like, oh, I never paid for this ticket. And I'm kind of thinking about, like, what, do they have camera footage of me and all that? And I'm thinking, well, what kind of person do I want to be? Mm-hmm. Like, in my teenage years, I think I would have been like, cool, I got away with it. And part of me was like, cool, I got away with it. But I'm also seeing, like, a superhero movie, right, of being just and being right for people. And so this whole debate is entering. I remember a friend of mine going to a store once and not getting charged for an expensive item. It was like a $150 item, and it was a big box store, and they didn't get charged for it. And so afterwards, they said, what should I do? I said, well, just think of your favorite superhero and do what that superhero would do, because that's the best intentions that you might have.
Well, your favorite superhero may not be. If your favorite superhero is Wolverine, don't do what your favorite superhero would do.
I know it's not completely a good way to go, but it's definitely thinking about like what your aspirations are. Anyway.
The sentiment is there.
Yes. As I was walking back to find my kids at the mall, I purchased a ticket on Fandango. Of course, I couldn't purchase for that one. I had to purchase for the later showing. But
and so then someone was, I'm sorry, sir, we're all out of seats to this movie. Ah,
I know, I ruined the night for somebody. Anyway, I thought it was kind of a interesting experience of toying with, being devious or whatever, mm-hmm. and deciding not to be that way. And of course, talking about it publicly with everybody, I broke the law.
Anyway. I stole something once. This is a true story. I only stole one thing ever in my life. It was...
Was it my heart, Ben?
No. I guess two things. It was Safeway in Santa Cruz on Mission Street. I stole an Andes Mint. From the bulk bin.
One of those chocolate wrap flat ones?
Yeah.
They had those in bulk?
Yes.
Oh, that's just asking for it.
I know, but that's a horrible excuse.
Did you ever go and pay for it?
No, because I didn't really know how to say, like, how do you express that to the cashier?
When I was leaving the
theater.
I'm
sorry, I need to give you 5 cents, but I don't want to put it in this jar. It's not for other customers. It's not the take a penny. Right. It has to go into the coffers of Safeway because I feel horribly guilty about my...
Did you feel guilty?
I did. I still do a little bit.
I realized it was really interesting, this experience for the movie. I didn't feel guilty for the corporation or for the movie theater. I didn't feel like... There was no guilt about it. It was much more about like, well, what kind of person do I want to be in society? It wasn't about like this emotional thing of like feeling bad about something. It was more like, well, do I want to be a person like that? Do I want everybody to be like that? And it really came down to, no, I want people to, respect people. I want people to abide by laws and all those things. I appreciate society being balanced. I definitely had that feeling of like, I'm going out. I want to pay. Like that, I kind of wanted to pay there. It was the Fandango thing that really was like, oh, no, that's the way to do it. I don't have to talk to a person. I don't have to pony up to being a total jerk to any human being and being embarrassed.
You were just going for efficiency.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, that so kind
why
of
did,
is.
So
that
why didn't you
is.
Do Fandango before you went in?
What happened was, while I'm – like I was planning on doing it beforehand, but I didn't know I was going to get to the theater in time. I really thought I might miss the theater.
Sure.
And I wanted to talk to a staff member to find out if the movie had already started, because I didn't really want to come in 5 minutes after the movie started. I had podcast editing to do. I could have done something in my car and hung out – you know, waited a couple hours for my kids to do whatever they were doing. That was fine. Or go be with them at the mall. That would have been fine. So it really was that I wanted to know if I was going to miss it or not. So when I walked to the theater and it started, I was like, oh, I'm not missing it. And then I was engaged in the film. So it wasn't until afterwards that I made the decision to what to do. But it took me a while. Like, I left the theater and was walking and thinking about it. And I was like, no, definitely want to do this. It was an interesting debate.
There's no Fandango for Andy Smits.
There isn't a Fandango for Andy Smits. That's true. I don't know how you could repay them. I think you should just go and pay them.
I could do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I need to do. I need to find a Safeway that has a bulk bin of Andy Smits. I need to
drop one off. Buy a box and go and drop one off.
Right. I could do that. No, I was thinking I could buy like 5 Andy Smits in one of those little bags. But then I could take a small weight with me and I could hide the weight in the bag.
That's genius.
And then they charge me for the bag of 5 Andy Smits.
You could just
one
bring
weight.
An Andy Smit in your pocket and drop it into your bag when you're leaving. And they'll charge you for the whole set.
It'd get all mushy. I would forget about it.
Yeah, definitely. Miles, crimes?
I was actually thinking, isn't this part of the plot of an episode of Orange is the New Black? The person who steals something, but she's absolutely wants to pay it back. She just doesn't have any money now because she's homeless. And then she goes back years later. The store that she did before, the store has changed hands. It's a different type of store now, but it's the same location. She's kind of confused. But she's like, here's this money for this. And they're like, we don't sell that. Like, no, it was from what was before, and I didn't have enough money, so I did it now. And then they find that she had just stolen something. She's like, no, you don't understand. This is for, because I don't have enough money, I'm going to pay that back in the future. And she got arrested and sent to prison.
Yeah. Thank you guys for the slight deviation on crimes. You don't have any crimes you want to talk about?
No.
Okay, good. You have a story about another phone thing.
I do. Have you ever heard of Ciempo?
Ciempo?
Ciempo.
No, I don't think so.
It was a Kickstarter. They were going to make a phone, and this phone was
I remember a Kickstarter phone. What was the deal with the phone? Really simple, right?
The deal with
the
phone was really simple.
Yeah.
The idea was use this phone, and it's not particularly fun to use, and so you don't use it all the time. You live your life, right?
But it's like you can text and you can call
with
it, period,
you can do all the things
right?
you need to do
on your
phone.
I thought they released
it. No, well, at least this one, they didn't get enough money on their Kickstarter. I think it was a Kickstarter. So they pivoted, and they decided, we're not going to make a phone. By the way, you start a company and you make a phone, like, I don't know, that seems a little ambitious. I'm sure they had plenty of experience in the necessary places, but, like, I would never, ever want to make hardware. I guess some people do, and they're just not me. They decided, let's make an Android lock screen, because you can replace the lock screen, the home screen on your Android device. So there are all these different home screens out there you can download for free or buy, and they all have these different features. All of them support widgets and, folders, They made a super, super simplistic one. And the idea was use this lock screen, and it will make your phone less fun to use but still usable.
What's the fun aspect of it? Why are they talking about fun rather than usability or...
So I'm not. I didn't read their PR material.
Oh, okay,
which
you just think
has
it's not as
no,
fun.
No CSS. It's just text. There's a FAQ.
I love that you judge websites by how much CSS there is.
No, I don't. I only judge them if they have absolutely none.
What are you talking about? It's an absolutely responsive site,
right?
And totally accessible.
What they say is that it says Ciempo replaces the stock Android home screen with a calmer, less distracting interface and allows you to personalize what message you see dozens or hundreds of times per day. So every time you open up the home screen, you see this message. And so you can set your intention, like be kind or whatever it is
that's
you
cool.
want to to stuff into your brain.
Like a little mantra.
Yeah, it's a fantastic idea, or an intention, right, is what they call it. They also allow you to control when you receive notifications. So instead of receiving them individually, you can batch them. Or you can say, I only want to receive notifications at this time. So all of your notifs stay until like 4 p.m. or 6 p.m. or whatever. And
right.
Then you can
choose
go through
the time.
Yeah.
I hear that's a good way to deal with grief as well. You kind of, if you're trying to move
right,
through something,
right.
You're trying to set aside a certain time of day for that kind of emotion.
Anything that's hard,
kind of distraction. Yeah.
You don't stuff it down. You say, I'm going to deal with this, just not right now. I'm going to deal with it at 6 p.m. I'm going to make half an hour to just feel it, right?
I'm going to have some Cheerios. I'm going to cry into a bowl.
Cheerios. Chocolate.
Okay, chocolate. All right.
You don't want to cry into your cereal bowl. Like, it gets soggy. It's not good. Anyway, so these are pretty cool ideas. One other really cool idea is you can flag apps as distracting apps. So you'll have Facebook, you'll have Instagram, you'll have, you know, whatever your apps are. And if you you open up your home screen, you've got your intention, you swipe to the left, and you've got all of the core apps that you use, and it's by the kinds of things that you do, like mail, and then you set whatever mail app it is, or internet. You swipe again, you have all of your other apps, and you swipe again, and you have all of your flagged apps. And all of your flagged apps are, there are no icons. They genericize all the icons. So Facebook is not blue, and you know Instagram isn't
that crazy.
There's
still text though, right?
Yeah, there's text.
Oh, okay.
And then there's a generic icon that comes with the launcher.
And they randomize the location?
They randomize the location, exactly.
That's awesome. So for the apps that you decide you don't want to use as much, it makes it harder to use them.
It makes it harder. It doesn't make it impossible. You just have to read each one of the names to find where the heck Facebook
cool.
or whatever.
Are you going to try this thing?
I did. I tried it.
And?
It was really ugly. It was really ugly.
Didn't have enough CSS, huh?
But right. But I love the idea.
I think it's cool.
I loved it. And so I uninstalled it. Although, you know, props to them, and I'd suggest trying it at least to see what it's like.
Again, this is called Simpo, S-I-E-M-P-O.
Simpo, yes. Simpo. GetSimpo.com. But I rearranged my home screen because
after
I was inspired. Yeah.
Cool.
And so
cool.
I've got the Google Home Launcher. I've got, I've got this little widget thing here.
Little message?
Yeah, a little message.
What's your message for today?
Right now it says, I enjoy being confident and open in social situations.
Oh,
so every time I open my phone, I read that. And then I try to actually like internalize it a little bit, right? I swipe over, I've got my calendar for the day and no other apps. I swipe over and I've got another calendar, and then I've got all the distracting apps, and I've just put them kind of over in the way. And they're not randomized. I'd love if they were randomized. But I find myself using my phone so much less because the default screen doesn't have my distracting apps. It has none of them. And I have to go through a little bit more UI friction to get to them.
Well, since you brought up apps and cool apps specifically, I want to talk about one that I just started using again today for something. I do a workout on an elliptical in the mornings mostly. And I like to log the amount of time I've worked. And I'm also logging my weight, keep track of those kind of things. And I look through a whole bunch of apps.
Yeah, there are a lot of them out there.
To do this kind of logging. And they're all much more complicated than I want. What I want to be able to do is every day at a certain time, write down my 20-minute or 15-minute or 30-minute, whatever my workout time is, how many calories, what distance. That's it. Just three figures and the time that I did that. And the best way I've been able to find to do this was to actually use what is called the Health Kit, the actual app that you can do raw data. But it's a pain to use. And I keep on thinking, well, I'll just write an app that will do this one thing.
Oh, no.
And then
no.
I realized I can use Workflow. And Workflow is this app on iOS.
Does it come with your phone?
No. You have to buy it. I think Apple actually bought them at one point, but it's still around. The app's still around. Workflow allows you to do like scripting, like if this, then, or that on the phone. So you can say, you know, take your clipboard and find the URLs of pictures in the clipboard and save those pictures into your photo library. Or it's a whole bunch of different flows of scripting.
So it's almost like programming.
It's very much like programming.
But it's not, I have to go and like make an app.
It's real simple. A great one that I use regularly is I don't mind coding on my laptop on the shuttle. And I don't mind looking at things on my screen, but reading long text on my phone on the shuttle is a little hard to do. And so I have one that just takes a web page and does a text-to-voice on it, right? So it just reads it for me, which is nice. In any case, Workflow. I highly recommend it. If you haven't used it, it's awesome.
I have to tell you about an app, actually, which is very similar to the one you were just talking
Workflow
about.
Workflow on iOS,
Yeah, no, actually, the one you were talking about, text-to-speech.
Oh.
Pocket. Have you heard of Pocket?
No.
It's one of those services that you can share things to, and then it just kind of aggregates the things you share so that you can come back later. Like, you know, stuff it in your pocket or put it off in your shelf or I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. Like a Pinterest kind of thing, but for data.
Right, right. So I've started sharing interesting things that I found that I want to read to Pocket, and it has text-to-speech. And it's this British man. It's
nice.
Great.
So
it's
it reads
fantastic.
Back to you.
The other day, I was having it read to me a very long and detailed thread on how to use modes in music in improvisational jazz playing. First of all, when it says you take the scale, it'll say you take the scale D, E, F, G, B, B, C, you know, like that. It's incredibly hard to understand. But it's also, it somehow like focuses me more because I have to really focus to understand what it's saying. The other thing is that this was a Reddit thread. And so there were comments afterwards. And Reddit threads get really snarky. So this British man is reading all of the different sides of this snarky music theory
debate.
Was
it funny?
It was fantastic. I listened to the entire thing while eating lunch and just giggling to myself.
Sounds like you have a new podcast option.
I almost choked a couple times. Like, I need to not do that. No Reddit threads during lunch. But I would recommend it.
Awesome. Miles, we haven't talked about Bitcoin in a while. Please tell us a Bitcoin story.
First, I want you to imagine the entire world's electricity usage.
What's with this really big numbers thing?
Numbers.
Just imagine 100 billion suns.
No, not that.
Okay, just the usage of the planet on electricity. Just electricity?
Yeah, but just think
not
of,
like,
don't think of it in terms of a raw number. Just think of it in terms of like a cake.
Okay.
A large cake.
Cake is not equivalent to power.
I know.
Are you going to do a cake chart or are you thinking pie?
Sure, pie, whatever.
Wait, why can't we talk about light bulbs? Like how much light bulbs are lit?
No. Just, okay, sure.
Yeah, I mean, you get it? Like you just.
Fine.
Okay, I want you to think of color. Okay, how much sand do you have?
What? Yeah.
Go on.
Let's say you've got
a 1,000-watt light bulb.
1,000 light bulbs.
Okay.
Whatever wattage. You got 1,000 of them, and that represents the entire world's electricity usage.
Okay.
And so you wanted everyone to have the ability to see light, so you.
Can we think of a smaller number? 1,000's really big. Let's do 100 light bulbs.
Let's do 200.
200 light bulbs. That's a lot of light bulbs. Okay. I got 200 light bulbs. Hang on a second. Go ahead.
And you got to divvy it out in such a way that everyone gets access to them. You have these 200 light bulbs. I'm going to give a light bulb to, say, Ireland.
Okay.
That's about what they're at. If you divide it up, all the electricity, they get a light bulb.
Ba-ding.
Now imagine that one of those light bulbs goes to the Bitcoin network.
What? Bitcoin uses as much energy as Ireland?
Yes. As the entire nation of Ireland.
Dude, that is a lot of cake.
The Bitcoin network. Or somewhere thereabouts.
That's a lot of power.
A single, the energy in a single Bitcoin transaction is about the same as the average Dutch household uses in a month.
So you're not talking about one envelope closure. You're talking about one transaction in the envelope.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh.
That's
the process from.
But wait a second. I've transferred Bitcoin that like one transaction that wasn't even that was worth like $4 or $1, $2 went that, and that actually cost the that one transaction had that much value.
It may have intensified over time.
Right, right.
Because there are more people involved, more people having to deal with the blockchain.
This is just briefly, this is one of the problems that I have with Bitcoin and with proof of work algorithms is you end up with people clamoring for more of a slice of the network compute power. And as such, the amount of compute, the amount of energy that is used by the entire network goes up and then up higher and then up higher because everybody's, you know, one-upping each other.
Right, keep in mind our February 23rd show, 2018, February 23rd, we had a whole show about Bitcoin and how it worked and where energy was being used with Kyle Barr. It was an amazing show. I highly recommend it.
Right. And we talked about how in the past or actually in the present, how gamers are having a hard time getting GPUs because they're all being bought up for cryptocurrencies and for mining. And the thing is, even the most avid gamer plays, what, the most avid ones, 8 to 12 hours a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ones who have an unhealthy addiction to gaming. You know, or they're a world champion StarCraft player. Who knows? You know, something like that. And yet, they can't get the best GPUs, which tend to be the most power hungry.
Because they're being purchased for Bitcoin?
Which runs crypto. 24 hours a day.
Right.
Wow. Mm. That not only we have the scarcity of resource, but that scarcity of resource that is very energy intensive is being used. In some ways, you might think it's being used more efficiently because they're using it 24 hours a day, whereas the gamer only uses it 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, or however much. The typical gamer, I'm sure, uses it for much less. It probably averages around 3 hours a day, average out over a week.
And their usage is not attacking the GPU at 100%, probably, yeah. Too. But
yeah, CPU right. And GPU, yeah. To give the actual number, it's really hard to figure out an exact number, but they do have upper and lower bounds. And they know that the Bitcoin network consumes just by itself at least a little more than 2.5 gigawatts of electricity.
It's using that many gigawatts all the time.
Yes. And may consume over 7.5, almost 7 2/3 gigawatts by the end of this year.
Wow. So it's still growing.
So in other words, it may triple.
One of the things that we brought up when I was talking with Kyle about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general is why Bitcoin still is the leader. And the reason why Bitcoin is still the leader of the currencies, if you will, is because there's so much hardware investment in the processing of Bitcoin chain, a blockchain for Bitcoin, and that all of them, some of those resources could be divvied to another resource, but basically everybody's doing it there, and that's why everybody's doing it there. It's a very strange self. Thanks. Well, shall we move on to your last story of the evening, sir? You wanted to tell us about Google and Microsoft?
Spectre and Meltdown, the CPU exploits.
From January.
Yes, have been making the news for quite a bit. Well, it turns out that Google and Microsoft have jointly found a new CPU flaw.
Similar to
these?
That
is similar to Spectre.
Side channel processor analysis kind of thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The speculative branch prediction.
Have we really covered that? I guess we did cover that in January.
It's speculative store bypass, variant 4. Yeah, so it turns out that most of the mitigations for Meltdown in browsers like Safari, Edge, Chrome, Firefox are applicable to this variant as well. The thing is, this is yet another variant that they found. It does need to be patched. It does require firmware updates for a CPU.
Mm-hmm.
And it will also affect performance.
Yeah, just like the last ones.
Yes. So there's an addition. They're going to be an additional hit of approximately 2 to 8% based upon benchmark scores like SysMark 2004 SE and the Spec Integer Rate.
So I feel like I heard this and understood this at one point, but maybe you could refresh my memory and maybe everyone's memory. Why is it that we must have isolation on a processor? If I have my own computer and I'm not letting you run any code on my machine as the first set, it doesn't matter. This vulnerability doesn't matter. I trust all the software on the machine. It's running. It's doing whatever it's doing. I'm running Photoshop and something else. I have no external applications running that I don't control completely and know. Does it have any matter?
Browsers are patched now, but at the same time,
I don't have a browser running. No browsers. I'm really talking about the simplest case. There's no browser. I'm using Photoshop and I'm printing to a printer and there's no network connectivity. It doesn't matter that this vulnerability exists.
Do you use any Photoshop plugins?
No, just what Adobe gave me, right? Like what I'm saying is that there's one place where you're fine. It doesn't matter that the processors, the isolated applications running in different spaces can interfere with each other. That doesn't actually matter.
So you're saying if there's nothing potentially malicious on your machine, it doesn't matter if everyone can see everyone's stuff right. In the worst case.
Right.
But if you have someone malicious on your machine,
you get a problem.
Now, you would say, can't you keep people who are malicious off your machine? But you have situations where you might be okay with not be okay with, but you might have malicious code run in your web browser, for example, or, you know, and it's on your machine, but it should be like in this box.
Okay. So, yeah, one side was the simplistic, like there's no other unsafe stuff on my machine. But the other side is that I take everything on the internet and I download it and run it, anything that anybody tells me. That's, of course, completely unsafe. And in anything you do, you can't compensate for that. So we're talking about this ground where we're trying to run some code that we don't exactly trust on the same machine we want to run trusted things. Is that kind of...
Yeah. So the software that you're describing, like say the Photoshop, does it have any times where it talks to the net?
No. Okay. I already said, yeah, like really, no network connectivity. So in the crazy scale of that, I take any application anyone wants to run, and I just say, yeah, run that. You email me an executable, I'll execute it. Like, so those are the outside bounds of, you know, completely safe versus completely insane. And so these vulnerabilities we're talking about are, we're trying to run code in a way that restricts what it can do, but giving it ability to run that code at all on your computer allows it to take advantage of these side channel things. Mm-hmm. And one of those things you're not really, you want to be careful with is just like opening a web page. Is that right?
Right. Although, as I said, the web browsers in general have been
compensating
down, have their own mitigation for that.
Because I've been listening to people debate whether they need to run these patches that slow down their processors when they're doing certain things and whether they can turn them on and off depending on what they're doing. If you're a video editor and you get all your files on your computer, then can you run in high, you know, in fast, dangerous mode? You see what I'm saying?
I see. You don't want to take the overall hit now that we've been getting. I don't know. I'm sure in theory you could, especially if you downloaded an older version of the an unpatched version of the operating system and then
right.
didn't allow the patches to reapply. Although if it's already been patched within the firmware, chances are that's a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that most of the time where this affects someone is not because it's their home computer. It would be the danger anyway is
a virtual server, right?
Yeah. When you're getting it from some outside source, you know, Amazon and the DigitalOceans out there, the Microsoft Azure, stuff like that, they're all trying to be proactive about this.
Handling this problem.
Right, because they know that it's a real threat.
I mean, a virtual private machine really is virtual. You don't actually have a piece of hardware. So the GeekSpeak website runs on DigitalOcean, and when it's running, it's on the hardware with other machines that are running, other virtual
right.
machines. And so this vulnerability would be a perfect case where people could, you know, read our data and vice versa.
Right. Now, at the same time, you'd have to get through the hypervisor and then get to the CPU level and then retract, you go back the other direction, and you'd have to know what else was running on there. And I'm sure that's a constantly changing environment, things getting moved around.
But January, that problem was a really serious problem all the people in those spaces were working on.
Right. And also if you had a database, there were some scenarios where your database would run literally 20% slower.
Right. Which can be expensive.
Yes.
And so now there's a new one of these, and hopefully the mitigations have already been in place kind of help with it, but you're saying that there's more investigation to learn. What's this one called?
Speculative Store Bypass, Variant 4.
Okay.
So, but the idea is that we have been running at breakneck speed. I say we as in the collective tech industry, hardware, CPU manufacturers, for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the last 20 years have been amazing. Yes, things were going fast in the 486 days and going to a Pentium and a Pentium 2, and there have been flaws. But this is something that literally every CPU for the past 20 years, as they've been going leaps and bounds, making things faster, aside from hitting some walls and going to multiple cores, that they're all affected.
Yeah.
Because it's an overall technique in CPUs that was, you know, in many ways necessary.
But giant win. Yeah.
Right. But you also wonder about, for example, AMD processors have not been subject to Meltdown. They have moved to Spectre, but Meltdown was the more serious of the two. And Intel processors were absolutely subject to Meltdown, and the only way around it is to slow the processor down because you just can't use that feature. There's no isolation there.
No predictive branch execution.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the issue there is the same one that I wonder about from the late 90s, where Windows was ascendant, Microsoft was very powerful. And people were talking about it for a long time, about what's the security model of Windows versus security model of Unix, and noting that many Windows aspects, like the fact that if you have something that's .exe or .cmd or any of these extensions, the operating system would just run them, as opposed to Unix, you need to set the execution
sure.
bit and the way the path was set up and things like that. That in terms of being fast, Microsoft was great, and they had all these great features that came into Word, and oh, oops, ActiveX, oops, macroviruses. I mean, so it makes me wonder about this breakneck speed to make the CPUs more efficient, make them faster, and they have been. They've been amazingly faster. How much has been we're rushing you out the door and hasn't had the security audit that they have? Because it's like these are coming out now. They've been in the CPUs for 20 years,
correct.
And no one has noticed.
All right. Well, that depressing story. Anything to close us out with more fun? I mean, pulling up the reins a bit on technology is not a bad thing. Cleaning things up, making things more secure,
yeah.
makes a lot of sense.
And they are now. I mean, the note and like the researchers finding the bugs and people patching them has, in the grand scheme of things, been happening very quickly.
Yeah.
The responses becoming there have been fits and starts. There's been people bricking their machines, so they have to reinstall Windows, that type of, or not bricking their machines, but making it unbootable. And other compatibility issues. But overall, I think the response has been very healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I guess, on an optimistic note, if you take a step back from any of these individual vulnerabilities and you look at the big picture, we always kind of push and pull on these things, right? We push forward, we get a lot of progress, and then we realize we've pushed forward too fast, and then we recoil, we're a little bit more cautious for a while, and then we do the whole cycle again. And these of course I don't remember the actual quote, maybe Miles it's in your brain somewhere, but someone said something to the effect of that's what history is, that is these cycles, right?
History is the diary of a madman.
Yeah, that was it, that was the one.
That was,
that was not the one.
Nice and optimistic.
Right, but I mean, like, things will get better, and then they will get worse again, and then they'll get better again, and that's where we are.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and used with permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, which means you can use our stuff any way you'd like, just give us credit. Today's title is Illuminating the Pentagon's Bumper Sticker for Bitcoins. The theme song is by Michael Newman. I want to thank our patrons this week. Here is everybody that contributed and wants to be named in April of this year. Chris Irwin, Pat Hader, Jeremy Devine, Jim Warner, Luke Pigeon, John Winston, David Leip, Alex Chen, Nirajis Clenius, Glenn Nelson, Marcus Hall, John Vizana, Mike Coopersmith, Spider Rogue, Ted Mazo, Joe Kyle, Ben Powell, Adam K. Foot, and also another 10 people or so who would like not to be announced or thanked, but I do thank them. Thank you all very much for contributing to our program. If you'd like to learn about supporting GeekSpeak, please feel free to join us online at geekspeak.org/support. You don't have to necessarily give us money. Giving us reviews or sharing that you love us or like listening to us at least is very much appreciated, especially on iTunes. I hear it does wonders for spreading the word. Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, thank you so much for joining me today on GeekSpeak.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Was there any closing thing you want to do?
I was wondering why you didn't bring up the Obamas with the Netflix deal.
Well, on the post show, we could do that.
Hello. Sure.
Yes, Ben?
Do you have any positive news about Netflix? Sorry.
Well, I learned a while ago as kind of a rumor, and then today I heard the kind of true announcement all over the place, and that is that Barack and Michelle Obama have signed a multi-year agreement with Netflix, the company I work for, and where we're sitting at right now, to produce a series and features. And the Obamas say they, in the quote, to promote greater empathy and understanding between peoples and help them share their stories with the entire world. So
that's awesome. I will be watching that.
I know no inside information. The only thing that happened is as soon as this article hit the internal flow, I'm on the team I'm now on is called the launch team. We have with new titles and stuff. And I just told my boss, I said, hey, if anything needs to happen for that show, please let me know. I want to do that. But of course, I don't know what will happen. So yeah, it's exciting.
You'll tell all of us.
If I work on UI elements that influence or that, you know, work around that show, yeah, I'll mention it after we launch
it.
Definitely.
Yeah. After you launch it. No, before.
I did some stuff for 13 Reasons Why that was launched this week, the season 2. I did some work on that.
Sorry.
13 Reasons Why is a popular show of ours.
Television and sports. I don't do it. Although I have to say.
Your next party, Miles and I should go talk to you. I'll talk to you about television. You can talk to me about sports.
That'll be fantastic. I'm really excited about that. John Mulaney is a hilarious comedian.
Oh, do you like him?
Yeah. You know of him, right?
Oh, I do. I've watched the special.
He has 3 Netflix specials, mm-hmm. and they're all really good.
Now, do you ever listen to the stand-up comedians audio only on your phone?
No. Literally the only 3 things on my... you know there's the bar that says resume watching?
Continue watching.
How many things max are shown in that bar?
Depends on what platform.
Let's say www or your browser.
The only one I know about is iOS.
Really? You don't know?
75 on iOS. A row can be 75 long.
75?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
I think the rows on iOS are 75 long.
Mine is 3.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, how do you do that? Do you complete?
It's because I've only watched 3 things on Netflix. Yeah,
Are you a paid customer?
Yes.
What's wrong with you, sir?
All of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, but if you watch a show completely, it gets removed from the continue watching row.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, this still applies. I've really only watched 3 things.
That's cool.
Which are Star Trek Deep Space Nine, John Mulaney specials, and Frasier.
Well, those are some long content, right?
I learned a few
seasons. Frasier's a lot of content.
Yeah, it's 11 seasons. I learned so many words from Frasier, from the show Frasier when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I'd watch that, and I came up with the fantastic response when someone's teasing you on the playground. You say, that insult does, I will not dignify that insult with a response.
But that is a response.
And that just shuts them down. Because, you know, like, it's...
How could they possibly say anything after that?
Absolutely, yeah.
If you know Ben a bit. You've listened to him for years. You've listened to his podcast
for a while. I do know Ben a bit. I am
And therefore, I suggest that if you think you know of a show that Ben might enjoy, please email geeks@geekspeak.org. Make sure to tell us all, because I want to find out if he actually does that.
I honestly thought you were talking to me for a second.
I'm sorry.
Like, you know
there's
Ben
another
a while. You were still looking at me
here.
at that moment. You're like, you know Ben a while. You've known Ben a while.
Okay, Miles, you watched more than 3 things on Netflix?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If you make a recommendation, it has to have no violence.
Or very low violence, like Star Trek, Deep Space Nine violence.
Very low violence, yeah. Very low violence.
There can be like a crash.
Wait, Deep Space Nine was very low violence? I don't know about that.
Deep Space Nine was not very low violence, but it was from the 90s.
Can you watch the A-Team and stuff?
I don't know what that is.
I feel so old. You still make
Ben is young.
Oh, yeah.
See, all you have to do is theme songs. Ben always remembers theme songs. Okay. Any case, not violent. Anything else?
Heavy emotional stuff. I'll just get sad.
No, not violent and not emotional. So,
well,
like
no, it can be sweet. It can be really sweet. But heartbreaking, no. I just internalize it too much. I empathize too much. I internalize it. And it makes me really sad. So,
and you want people to be kind to each other, right? Like, you're
If there's a show, a television show, movie, where everyone's just nice to each other, like, that's what I want.
Okay.
And no conflict.
There can be a little bit of conflict, but
there should be love as well.
Too much. Yeah. This is why I don't like
Kimmy
the
Schmidt
new...
probably would be for him then.
Oh, you might like Kimmy Schmidt.
That?
The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, you'd probably dig that.
Okay, I have no idea what that is, but maybe I'll watch it.
It's one of our original shows.
That's why I don't watch the new Star Trek anymore.
Yeah.
Too much action, too
but,
much
But, you know,
violence.
You hooked me up to Orville, and I like Orville a lot.
The Orville is okay, yeah. There's some violence in that, but it's close enough to old Star Trek.
Okay, recommendations for Ben on shows of that nature that he might enjoy. Please feel free to email at geeks@geekspeak.org. Here's a hint, though. If you have a continue watching row and you watch something and it's in that row and you want to get rid of it because you know you never want to watch that again.
Skip to the end?
No. There's 2 things you can do. You can give it a thumbs down, which means don't ever show me this title again. I think it'll get removed if you continue watching row, but it'll take 24 hours. The other thing you can do is you can modify your account history whenever you want. So you go to your account settings on the website, and there's a history tab, and you can go and just delete anything you want.
I have a third way. Third way.
You can cancel your service.
Yeah, that's third way. Fourth way, you
make
open
a new profile.
It, you skip to the very end. Fifth way, right-click, inspect element, delete the element from the DOM.
How are you
going to
save that forever?
Well, no, I mean, you have to do it every time.
You can't. You can make, a bookmark.
You can't argue with me. It removes it from the row.
Yeah, it wouldn't work on TV or on iOS or Android, so it's not that good. But I do like the idea.
I only use... Do you call it www?
Anyway, we have a feature. You can delete it.
What do you call that platform? Web?
Web, yeah.
Web, okay.
Web UI normally. And then
web
TV
UI.
UI. Yeah. Okay. What do you call Facebook's main website? Www?
Yeah, it was just called www because the repo is called www.
Do you say three W's or you just say www?
I haven't worked a lot. Despite being a front-end engineer, I actually have not worked a lot in that repo. So I don't... I call it www.
Can I recommend 6U? As a name?
No, that's not.
That's three W's.
No, it's not. It's not.
What are you watching lately, Miles? We're an after show.
Honestly?
Sports?
David Attenborough.
David Attenborough.
Basically, I type in ATT. The search results come back with David Attenborough. Well, I click on that one. And then I say, hey, Zoe, which one do you want to see? And we watch those together. And there's,
is
I don't
he
know,
the...
20... Or so to choose from. That they're not all David Attenborough. They're not all BBC.
You need to fill in a little more. What's the content? What's David Attenborough?
He's got a British voice, right?
He's the naturalist. When you're watching a show.
Yes, that guy. Yes.
That talks about animals as though they were part of his family. This is what it sounds like always.
That was beautiful. I have a tear in my eye.
Were you here when he was doing the radio show feeds for us when we were on the radio show?
No.
We stopped being on the radio because I don't have time to edit another content source. But yeah, he did the output. And people in Boulder Creek were like, oh, you have the show with the guy with the great voice.
And they say this to you. I haven't heard of it. Anyway, there's... You know, Life, Blue Planet, Planet Earth 2.
Did you watch the new Cosmos?
I have.
That was good, too.
The Neil deGrasse Tyson. I also watched the old Cosmos. But I don't know if Netflix has that one, though.
I don't know either.
But they are available on YouTube, so I guess maybe I've been watching them there. I mean, how can you go wrong? Mm-hmm. It's absolutely under the heading of, like, what? I'm not wasting time. This is educational. What? I'm sure my daughter can watch this. There's no... Yes, there is violence, but it's the natural violence that has a context that you can talk about. And and now my daughter probably knows more animal species than anyone else in her class. So, hey.
Ah, Greg suggests The Great British Bake Off as the show to watch.
I have heard that that is very good. I have not watched it. But I've heard that everyone's kind to each other. Like, everyone's supportive.
I agree.
It's like,
I think baking shows would be perfect for you.
It's like American baking shows without the drama.